Good evening and welcome from around the world. Mary Keene here, and this evening our guest is James Occhiogrosso. Jim was an engineer for 25 years, and some interesting things occurred in his life. He is now a naturopath, master herbalist, and nutritional consultant. And Jim, good evening.
Hi, Mary. Good evening to you.
I thought you'd like to tell our audience how you came to change your profession, because that certainly means a great deal in our conversation tonight.
Okay, well, back probably about 20 years ago, I was in the computer programming profession, writing computer programming books and doing custom programming and trying to work around a lot of problems, health problems that I was having with my prostate issues and that my wife was having with various issues of her own, and started trying to research solutions for this in a natural way, and found very little available information-wise, and much of the information that I actually did find I found to be incorrect. So I started getting into a pretty heavy research program to try and solve the problems that both myself and my wife were having, and that led to more formal studies and an awful lot of research and a lot of trial and error, but I learned quite a bit, and I got quite interested in it, and got tired of writing computer books and started getting into writing health books.
And your book, of course, is Your Prostate, Your Libido, Your Life. And you bring natural solutions for common prostate problems. So let's talk about almost 25 to 30 million men in the United States with prostate conditions at various levels. And now that you're in private practice for several years, what kinds of help are you offering, and what type of patients come to you generally?
Well, I see some patients that have been diagnosed with prostate cancer and have been put into a what they call a watchful waiting or surveillance mode, whereby their cancer is not being treated. They've taken the option not to treat their cancer aggressively right at the current time. So what they do is they back off and get tested about every 6 months or so for their PSA, and usually a biopsy included in that. And at the same time, go on to, if they're working with me, they get them onto a nutritional program and a prostate support program, which is geared to try and improve the health of the prostate and, you know, keep them at least at the point that they're at this time without needing surgery or further medical treatment.
Is there any relationship with people who have come to this point between diet and other chronic problems that the person may have had to get to the point of prostate cancer? In other words, how can one avoid these problems, or is it possible to avoid them?
Oh yeah, most of these type problems, it's partly genetic, but the bulk of the problems are nutritionally related. Hormone balance is a very, very serious issue with this. The situation where estrogen levels in people, generally in people, are rising, mainly because of all the plastics in the environment, which put pseudoestrogens into the body, which tend to react in the body as if it were, you know, the same. The body reacts basically in the same manner as it does to the estrogen produced by the body. And high estrogen levels coupled with low testosterone levels can definitely increase one's chances of developing things like BPH, benign prostate hyperplasia.
It's interesting you mentioned the word estrogen, and of course women know the word, but are men surprised that this is part of their being?
Oh yeah, very much so. Whenever I mention estrogen to a man, he looks at me with and says, huh, you know, that's a woman's hormone. You know, this is a kind of a misnomer that's been carried along for a long time. Estrogen and progesterone are not specifically female hormones. Males and females make the same set of hormones. What differs between a man and a woman is essentially the balance between these hormones. Men make more testosterone and less estrogen and progesterone, and women make more estrogen and progesterone and less testosterone.
Well,
but the important thing is that all hormones are there, and the prostate definitely has receptors on it for estrogen and progesterone.
How can you find out what's going on in the body in a so-called natural way? In other words, is there a test? Is there something one can do? And do what kind of tests, for example, do you do?
Well, I have a whole range of saliva tests. They're all available on my website, which is www.prostatehealthnaturally.com. And these tests are basically very simple to work with. I send the person a kit, which consists of a couple of tubes to spit into. And he puts his saliva in the tube and mails it out to the laboratory, and the laboratory runs a test. And depending on which which test he selected to take, this can be a full hormone profile of 8 to 10 hormones, or he can just test testosterone if he likes. But generally, the better way to do it is to do a panel of at least 5 or 6 hormones that are related to prostate malfunction, and then look at the balance of these hormones and see if anything needs to be readjusted or rebalanced.
And how would that take place once you get a test? And everybody's different, of course, so each person is you look at differently.
Well, in some instances, we have some bioidentical hormone creams that can be used to, let's say, if progesterone levels are low, or if the man has very high estrogen levels, a bioidentical progesterone cream will fit in basically in the same receptors on the prostate that the estrogen would go into. So progesterone can block some of the negative effects of estrogen. Then we have some herbal testosterone boosters, which at the same time can boost his testosterone level if that's low. And typically in an older man, his estrogen levels are a bit high. His progesterone levels may be higher or low, depending. And his estrogen levels are high, and his testosterone levels are low, which is what leads to a lot of prostate problems, including erectile dysfunction and BPH.
I think we once spoke about how many sites there were on the Internet, and there were hundreds, as I recall, that are involved with all kinds of products for ED, erectile dysfunction. And, of course, it's on television, it's on radio. For many, 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 many years, it was never talked about. And all of a sudden, there are more things for this kind of advertising than anyone has ever seen. So how does a person know whether any of that is useful or could be harmful?
Well, that's a tough question. Most of what's available on the Internet is... there are many, many various prostate support formulas, and they call them male enhancement formulas and stuff like that. Basically, almost all of them contain the same range of herbs that they use. A few will go into a different area. The ones that are specifically pushed for, let's say, overcoming erectile dysfunction, they fall into a kind of a special class. There are very, very few of them that actually work. And what I've seen with some of them that actually do work is they're laced with pharmaceuticals.
I see.
You'll find things like Viagra or Cialis or Levitra, actually sitting into this particular supplement at the same time.
Yeah,
it'll seem to work, but you may have the same side effects or possible medical problems that you would have with the drug.
I believe we may have a call or two on the line, Seth.
No, that, I believe that was my fax.
Oh, okay. Well, then we'll just go right on. The sound certainly sounded the same. The problem of men is they're wonderful people, and the women who love them wish they would, if they have a problem, try to take care of it early so the problems do not get more so. And how can we hope tonight will be helpful to men who would like to know more about it and feel comfortable that there are things that can be done. How do we get men to take better care of themselves?
Well, that's a question I can't answer, really. That's a problem I typically have. Quite frequently, I deal with a woman who's called in or come into my office because her husband is having problems, and he won't come in, but she will. And it's difficult for me to deal specifically with the woman because even though she knows what his problems are and they're close, they could have a very close relationship, but she may not be experiencing, she isn't experiencing the exact feelings that he's experiencing, and I'm talking about physical feelings, not emotional.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And she can't really answer the questions that I would ask him. He would have the answers to those because he's feeling them, you know, like, you know, various questions that would involve urinary type issues and, you know, erectile type issues. She may not be able to answer all of these. So it's real difficult to deal with a person that doesn't really have the problem.
Well, you know, with breast cancer, as you know, there's been a huge plug for a number of years with all kinds of races and raising money to find answers for breast cancer. It seems to me men may deserve the same kind of thing going on so that they'll feel more comfortable coming forward and taking care of themselves before things get to a higher level of problem.
That's very true. And in many cases, I see men and they come into my office looking for a quick herbal solution to, let's say, a problem with erectile dysfunction.
Mm-hmm.
And what I try to tell them is that the body, the reason they're having erectile dysfunction to begin with is because nerves in the genital area are, arteries in the genital area are pretty clogged, and that's what's causing the problem with erections. But trying to make them understand that the body doesn't single out this group of arteries to clog up. If they're clogged here, it's just they're clogged all over the body. It's just that this is a very obvious symptom that you see, you know, when a man is looking to have sex and his plumbing doesn't work. This is, you know, it gets his attention very rapidly. What he doesn't know is at the same time, arteries in his heart may be clogging up. So, you know, the bottom line on this is I try to explain to them that erectile dysfunction is a beginning symptom of cardiovascular problems.
That's very interesting. I don't know how many people are aware of that.
Probably very few. And unfortunately, most guys with erectile dysfunction, they go into their doctor and walk out with a prescription for Viagra or Cialis or Levitra. And, you know, they go home, and as far as they're concerned, their problem is solved. But these drugs, while they solve the immediate symptom and overcome the immediate symptom problem, they are not getting anywhere near the real problem, which is the underlying problem of poor blood circulation.
Do you have a sort of a general list of what you do for a person with an average problem, just a beginning state? In other words, where do you take this for the individual? What kinds of things do you suggest? We're talking about lifestyle, diet, supplements. Where do you begin?
Well, I usually evaluate a man's general lifestyle, including, you know, his the way he eats, his nutritional balance. And in most cases, I find a lot of things that he should be eliminating, things specifically that raise estrogen content in a man, especially an older man, and a man, let's say, over 50 years old, should not really be eating foods that raise estrogen content in the body. And this would include things like most dairy products, specifically cheeses, soy products. There are a lot of things, a lot of red meat can also do the same thing. So we first start off there. We try to get his diet into a more manageable area, which is hard sometimes because some people just, you know, I eat very little meat. And I've had men, you know, tell me, well, how do you survive without eating a steak every day? You know, I said, well, you know, how does an elephant survive without eating a steak every day? You know, and gorillas, they're also, they're not carnivorous. They eat plants. But bottom line is to get them on a better diet, and then to, you know, most men, that when they first come in to see me, they're on, they are not taking any supplements at all, or they've tried one or two male enhancement supplements, which really don't give them the basic nutrients. So what I try to do is start them off with the basic nutrients, and usually that's the first five letters of the alphabet to get their status up, you know, vitamins A, B, C, D, and E. And then, you know, if we don't have any improvement within a month or two or any better feelings within a month or two, then we can start adding some prostate-specific supplements on, you know, things that support prostate health, you know, just on a general basis.
If people go into health food stores, it's sometimes daunting. First of all, there are 8 million different things on the shelves, and unfortunately, the people who work there are not trained to know their products. Now, I'm sure there are some who do. And a person who asks, what do I use for name any condition, they get suggestions, but they may not be getting the right suggestions. How do you suggest to your patients how to handle that? Of course, they're dealing with you, and you have the knowledge. But it's as much a problem as it is with medicines on what to take as it is with vitamins. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, yeah. The situation is, you know, you wouldn't... I always tell people, you know, you go into a health food store, and they have a whole tremendous range of various supplements. But the problem is that would be, it's kind of equivalent to walking into a drugstore, which has a tremendous range of drugs, and
yes,
picking and choosing which drugs you'd like to take today for your problem. If you don't know specifically which ones you need, you're embarking on a potential problem area. And a good example of this is many, many herbs are high in various phytochemicals that can thin the blood. So somebody who goes in, a good example of this is an herb like ginkgo biloba.
Mm-hmm.
And this particular herb has blood-thinning ability, and if somebody happens to be in a health food store, the health food store clerk is not going to ask them if they're on prescription blood thinner.
Sure.
So, you know, somebody goes in there and they start taking a high dose of ginkgo biloba, and that's going to potentiate the effects of the blood thinner that they're on, possibly causing an internal bleeding problem, which could be very serious and possibly even life-threatening.
Well, that's a pretty scary sort of thought. But we've all been in health food stores and have heard someone near you ask a youngster or someone who works there, what do you recommend for, and then the problem, and off they go to a shelf. So fortunately, there are stores where they do hire people that are specifically trained, but that's not true everywhere.
It's not universally true, unfortunately.
There's something quite interesting. With Jim practicing alternative therapies but having a very strong background in research, and in his book he does a superb job of telling you everything about different kinds of herbs, what they do, what is not good, what they shouldn't go with, which is so important. But at the same time, while he's practicing alternative therapy, he has the distinct honor to be asked by the American Cancer Society to come and present at a group. And you can tell more about that, Jim.
Well, I speak at several man-to-man prostate cancer support groups in the local area here. There's two of them that are within about 15, 20 miles of where I live, so I speak regularly at them, and another one within about it's about 70 miles from where I live, and I go up there occasionally by invitation to speak at the group. And this is generally a group of men who have already been diagnosed with prostate cancer and are looking, many of them looking for ways to keep this cancer under control so that they don't need additional treatment over and above what they've already had. In some cases, many of the men have already had pretty aggressive cancer treatment, and all they're looking to do at this point is improve their health so that they don't wind up with cancer forming somewhere else in the body.
And have you had good success with that kind of thing? I mean, I would assume people who are at this level are delighted to get information to help them.
In some cases, yeah, and I can't say that, you know, we're successful every single time. Cancer is a very strange disease, sometimes hard to control. If a man has a very aggressive prostate cancer, for example, with a high aggressiveness score, then the potential for, let's say, natural things helping him and slowing that down is pretty low. But fortunately, most men that are diagnosed with prostate cancer have a relatively low, what they call the Gleason score, which is a measure of the aggressiveness of the cancer. They have a relatively low score, and in many, many cases, they can survive with that cancer. Prostate cancer is generally a slow-growing cancer, and in many cases, they can survive with it for many, many years.
Interesting. Go ahead.
I have an uncle that was one of my father's brothers diagnosed with prostate cancer when he was 62 years old, and he recently passed away at 87. He passed away. He still had prostate cancer. He never had any treatment. He passed away from other causes.
I remember several years ago talking with a gentleman from a university in California who was an MD, who said that prostate cancer is one of the slowest growing cancers. Is that generally true and still the feeling today?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. In fact, much of prostate cancer, and this is, a lot of urologists will jump all over me for this, but an awful lot of prostate cancer is overtreated.
Mm-hmm.
In the United States today. And this is pretty much the position of the Prostate Cancer Research Institute also, that there is a lot of overtreatment of prostate cancer.
What do you mean by overtreatment?
Well, a man with no symptoms whatsoever goes in for a regular medical checkup, and mm-hmm. His PSA test, the blood test, is run for his PSA. And incidentally, we also have PSA tests if a man wants to get a PSA test without going directly to a medical doctor. He can purchase one from us, and again, that goes right out to a lab. He has to, you know, pinprick himself like diabetics do with a little lancet and put a drop of blood on a card, and it goes out to a laboratory for measurement. But anyway, a man goes into an internist, and he gets his PSA tested, and as an incidental item to all the other blood tests, and suddenly his PSA has gone over the normal cutoff range, is 4, and his PSA may be 4.5 or 5, and right away he's recommended to a urologist, who will usually recommend that he have a biopsy. And if he's in, you know, general range of prostate cancer in men, and this is from a couple of studies that they did on men who were, who met their demise for reasons other than prostate problems, you know, things like auto accidents and other things, that the amount of prostate cancer found in a man, incidental prostate cancer, was basically about the same percentage as the man's age. So a 70-year-old man would have about a 70% chance of having cancer in his prostate. So, you know, whether this cancer, many men, you know, live to be 85 or 90 years old and are never diagnosed with prostate cancer, but then on autopsy they find that they did have prostate cancer and it probably was there for 20 or 25 years.
So, with, I think what you just said was if one has prostate cancer, it's possible to live many years with it, depending on what type.
Yeah, all cancer is basically can be classified in different modes of aggressiveness. And if you have a very, very aggressive cancer, that's going to result, usually it's going to result in symptoms, it's going to result in PSA readings that go off the chart, and the growth of that cancer is going to be outrageously fast, okay? But that's the that's not the norm, that's the extreme case. The norm is more a slow-growing type cancer that is may or may not be life-threatening at any point. The problem is that in my book, I quoted a quote from a man, Dr. Bernard Jansen, who wrote a book, I believe it was The Science of Iridology, back in 1952. And one of the things he mentioned in this book is that many things in the medical profession is where the patient is coerced to do what the doctor wants him to do due to fear.
Yes,
and that's very, very true. It's just as true today as it was back in 1952 when that book was written. Unfortunately, and I have many clients that are in this shape that have had their prostates removed, and now they've done more research after all the surgery, and, you know, they had the surgery basically within 2 to 3 weeks after their initial diagnosis, which means basically they rushed right into this without doing any research. And then, you know, one fellow that I like very much, and he's done a lot of research, he's a very smart guy, done a lot of research on this, but unfortunately his family, his children, his wife, and everybody and his doctor all scared him very much. He had a very low level of aggressiveness of prostate cancer, and he's now not a very happy camper because he's stuck with, for the past, I guess it's about 4 years now since the surgery, and he is, you know, he has no sexual function at all. So he's, you know, this is something that probably could have been avoided because his cancer was not a very fast-growing cancer. It wasn't very serious.
Well, it certainly gives you pause to think about that, but you're quite right. Fear is the guiding feature when you're given an ultimatum, and you don't know anything. You're standing there and you want to live. And sometimes it's not given to you in a kindly way even. For example, you didn't react quite the same way. I think our audience would be interested to know how you came to get to be a naturopath and what happened in your life that led you there.
Well, It's a long story, but basically every male in my family who has lived to be over the age of 40 has had prostate problems. And it's kind of a given with my family. I have a cousin that was hospitalized for extreme BPH when he was 42. My own father woke up on a Sunday morning at he was 54 years old, and he couldn't urinate at all, and he had been living with BPH for many years. And we took him into the hospital, and they catheterized him to relieve the, you know, relieve the pressure on him so he could urinate. And told him he had to have his prostate removed because, you know, he was just way too big, and so on and so on and so on. And Like I said, he was 54 years old. He had the surgery on Monday morning, and on Monday evening we were making funeral arrangements for him.
Oh,
so,
my.
You know, that was a big, huge blow. One of the reasons why his brother, the one I mentioned before, the one that lived to 87 from 25 years, he lived with prostate cancer, one of the reasons why he didn't want to have any treatment, you know, because he saw what happened to his brother, and, you know, the fear factor was working the other direction with him. And basically he made a, as far as I'm concerned, he made a pretty good decision because he continued to live 25 years longer and never really was bothered by the prostate cancer.
That's wonderful.
So, you know, when I started looking at this, you know, I had a big, a huge history in my family of this, and basically the fear factor of having cancer versus the fear factor of being destroyed, letting this cancer destroy me, you know, they were in a different ratio of balance than most men walking into a doctor and, you know, the doctor announcing you've got cancer. And that word is a scary word.
Yes, it is. And you say, you mentioned earlier about that it may be genetic. Has that been proven? I guess it has in your family, but is that something?
Well, I don't really buy that. Yes, well, every male in my family had prostate problems, but didn't kill them all. And many of them, not many of them, but I guess I'm the one that broke the mold. I didn't go for aggressive medical treatment, and I've been treating myself for many, many years with various herbs and nutrients. And, you know, my prostate problem started, probably 25, 30 years ago. And I've been living with them, and they're not terribly serious. You know, I would love to do without them, but, you know, life is not so kind to me. I have them, they're there, I live with them, and they're not so bad. Certainly a lot better than the side effects of any kind of prostate treatment would be.
What about biopsies? Is there any negative to a biopsy? I've heard both ways. What is your opinion?
Well,
and I'm speaking of the prostate condition.
Well, a biopsy is a highly invasive procedure. And yeah, there's negatives to it because, you know, prostate biopsy is done through the rectum. And, you know, no matter how many, how well you clean the area and, whatever enemas you do or anything like that, you still have the potential for fecal matter to be driven into the prostate, when the biopsy is done. You also have, and this is controversial. Some medical doctors say yes, some say no. But you also have the potential for releasing some cancer cells into the bloodstream, thus spreading the cancer to other areas, if there is cancer there.
That is not a good
thing. No, there are other ways other than biopsy. There are a few medical doctors that have what is called a color Doppler ultrasound machine, which can give them a very, very good view of the prostate, and what they look for is this Doppler effect of blood vessels growing in a specific area of the prostate. So that
what was the name of that machine again?
It's a color Doppler ultrasound machine.
Well, that's an interesting one. I have never heard of that before. That's interesting.
Yeah, and the Doppler, if you know the Doppler effect of like when you're standing by a train track and a train goes by you, and you hear the train whistle change in pitch as it passes. That's because the sound waves are being compressed and then expanded as the train moves away from you. And they use that same principle with blood flow inside the prostate so that they can see hot spots. Any cancerous tumor usually commands the surrounding blood vessels to feed it. So you find a hot spot in the prostate. And I've, you know, several of my clients have been, you know, with high PSAs, and I've just recommended that they go to a doctor that has this sort of machine and get a, you know, a trans, rectal ultrasound of their prostate. And many of the, all the doctors that do this, that have this machine, I think there's only, if I'm not mistaken, there's only about three or four of these machines in the United States. And the doctors that have them generally, they'll do a biopsy if they feel it's necessary. They'll take a biopsy, but the difference is they don't randomly take 24 or so cores from the prostate. They may just take one or two samples from areas that appear to be suspicious.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a lot less traumatic. And with a couple of my clients that I recommended that they go to this sort of a situation, they came back and they were basically told that they don't have cancer.
That's so very interesting.
So it saved them from actually having a 24-core biopsy, which, you know, can cause urinary bleeding and all kinds of discomfort for many months.
You do some wonderful articles on your website, which is prostatehealthnaturally.com. This machine that you mentioned probably would be a very good article for you, because if people have not heard of it and it's quite new, it would be interesting for them to have a choice.
Yeah, well, generally, you know, when I get to that sort of point, I stay away from those sort of articles because I'm not a medical doctor.
Sure.
And there are very, very good articles about that machine, how it works, and articles. You know, I've written a lot of articles on about prostate cancer and prostate cancer treatment, over-treatment, and the use of testosterone in older men. For both for health and for erectile problems. But I stay away from that sort of thing because that's very, very well covered in the Prostate Cancer Research Organization's website and in their newsletter.
Well,
and not only is it well covered,
that's a very good bit of information. I think.
And usually when I get somebody that's come into my office that needs that kind of assistance, I usually send them out to the Prostate Cancer Research Organization's website, and they also have a support line, and you know, they can help them a lot more than I can, so I just shuffle them off. I'm more interested in the guy that doesn't really need any kind of aggressive treatment at this point, you know, mm-hmm. getting him back to a state of healthiness so that if he does have cancer, it doesn't spread any further.
Now, you mentioned some food. You mentioned cheese, you mentioned meat, and what was the other?
Soy.
And can you tell us a little bit about why these three items are negative?
Well, meat products in general, there's an awful lot of... there's an awful lot of research that's been done on red meat and its effects on the body. And generally, people who eat a lot of red meat have a lot of problems. You know, the human body is not really built to eat large amounts of red meat. I'm a firm believer in the caveman kind of diet. You know, the caveman lived in his cave and he collected roots and berries and nuts and once in a while, he was lucky enough to kill a rabbit or a squirrel, and then he had meat for a day or so. But meat was not the primary thing in his diet.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the human body has not evolved that much from caveman days to now, but yet our diet has changed tremendously. Nutrition levels have gone way down because most people eat strictly processed food, very little real food. And people who survive on processed food.
I can understand that.
Yeah, right. wind up generally having all kinds of health problems, not just prostate problems. They wind up with all kinds of health problems.
And
that's one of the major issues with older men that have erectile dysfunction. They also usually have several other comorbidities that are going along with those, with the erectile dysfunction, that put them in a very high risk factor for, serious medical problems.
So you're looking at meat is a strong negative. And then
oh,
the
yeah.
next Next one was soy.
Yeah, soy. Soy is estrogenic in nature. So putting soy in the body, a lot of women going through menopause are told to eat soy products and take things, herbals like black cohosh, which basically increase estrogen levels. Now, phytoestrogens, which are plant estrogens, which would come in things like black cohosh, are much better for the body than the synthetic estrogens that you would find in meat. And, you know, in a cow, for example, is an animal that is geared to survive on a diet of grass, basically. But yet what we do is we take cows and we put them into a feedlot and we feed them grain to fatten them up. And we feed them antibiotics. We jam it all in together, and then we have to give them antibiotics to keep them from getting sick. And then they also hit them with some hormones to increase their growth and cause them to get fat, because a fat cow brings more, money per pound than a skinny cow. But the bottom line is, when you eat that cow, you eat the meat from that cow, you're getting a dose of estrogen and hormones. You're also getting a dose of antibiotics at a low level. True.
Yeah.
But, you know, when your diet consists of mostly that kind of food, you're putting it in on a daily basis, every day, every meal. And it adds up.
What about, you heard about GMO products, and soy, of course, is one of those mentioned. And what about organic products as against what we're talking about?
Well, many studies have shown, in the recent past, have shown that organic products have a much higher level of nutrients in general than non-organic products. You know, an organic vegetable has a higher level of nutrients in it than an inorganically grown vegetable. Still, even the organically grown vegetables don't have the nutrient content that vegetables, let's say, were grown 100, 150 years ago, before we depleted much of the soil with today's modern farming techniques. And I think a lot of farmers are starting to realize now that organically grown plants are healthier. They can use less pesticides on them. They're more drought resistant, and they generally produce better fruit. So organic fruits, organic vegetables are in general a lot healthier for you than non-organically farmed vegetables.
Now, you would also mention cheese. What is it about dairy products? Of course, I'm assuming you're talking about the same chemicals that the animal is ingesting.
Yeah, well, basically the same chemicals, but when it comes to things like cheese, for example, cheese is a very high fat content. And in all mammals, the hormone estrogen is stored in fat tissue. So the high fat content in cheese also indicates a very high estrogen level in cheese. So a heavy diet of cheese tends to raise a man's estrogen level, and raising estrogen levels, if that the estrogen isn't offset by some other hormone, tends to cause prostate problems, prostate growth and or prostate cancer.
So if, let's say, a gentleman does what you say, and not everybody does, it's because that's the way life is, but let's say he does, how soon or what's the general time period where that person notices that he feels better, or you can determine that things are getting better?
Well, it depends on the problem. Things like prostatitis kind of problems where, and this is very, very common, infections in the prostate, either bacterial infections or fungal infections, tend to be chronic and long-term. And low level also, generally don't cause horrible symptoms, but sometimes they flare up. And a man that has like a flare up of a prostate problem, bacterial kind of prostate problem, can get relief within a few days.
Really?
With some natural products. But, you know, total complete relief and resolution of that problem may take a year.
Well, that's a reasonable period of time. You were, what is your most, without any names, of course, but what is your most exciting example that you've seen in your practice, or you may have more than one or two, but do you have any you can talk about?
I had one fellow that had a pretty nasty chronic prostate infection, and he was hurting pretty bad, waking up about every 20 to 30 minutes at night, and that's pretty common with prostate problems. You tend to wake up at night. You wake up with a feeling to urinate, and then when you urinate, very little comes out, and you go back to sleep, and 15, 20 minutes, an hour later, you're waking up again with the same feeling all over again. So this goes on all night long, and a man may wake up 7, 8, 9, 10 times during the night with, a severe prostate condition. And that's basically, usually that's not a symptom of prostate cancer. It could be, but it generally isn't. Nor BPH. BPH will cause waking up, but not as often. It's mm-hmm. usually caused by some sort of an infection in the prostate, and some natural products can bring that under control very, very quickly. And this particular fella was waking up every half an hour, and within about 3 to 4 days, he was waking up only 2 or 3 times a night. So he was
I bet he was happy.
Oh yeah, no, he called me up very, very happy. He went from waking up every half hour to waking up every 2.5, 3 hours. It's a big difference.
And it certainly takes its toll when you don't get a decent night's sleep on anybody for any reason.
Yeah. You're dragging the next day, and you can barely function because you need sleep and you didn't get any.
Right. Well, you started to tell me you've had other people that have had reasonably quick turnarounds.
Yeah. I've had several people that have gotten into that, pretty much that same sort of a situation. This particular person I'm talking about, he was the worst. But I've had several people with, suddenly having a situation where they're waking up many times during the night, not as often as this guy, but waking up many times during the night and having some prostate aching and pain and stuff like that. And, that resolves usually within a week, week and a half.
Well, that's amazing. I can't actually know, but I can certainly get in the head of somebody and understand what a relief it would be to find help.
Yeah, well, it's when the problem is basically either a bacterial infection or a fungal infection. And fungal infections are relatively common. Candida overgrowths can happen in the prostate as well as with a woman.
How do you identify that?
Well, you don't. I mean, I suppose you could if you did all kinds of tests, but generally, a brute force approach kind of works pretty good. I mean, if it doesn't start to resolve within a couple of days, then it's time to go for tests.
And
if you can't get it to the point where it calms down within a couple of days, then obviously we're not barking up the right tree, and more tests have to be run to see if you can determine exactly what's going on. But in many cases, it resolves very quickly, and once it's resolved, especially with chronic prostatitis that flares up every now and then. Many men have that situation where it just flares up once every 3 or 4 or 5 months,
mm-hmm.
and it can be resolved relatively quickly and keep them on a pretty even keel.
Well, that's amazing.
Now, medically, they usually use a strong antibiotic for this. But the problem with the antibiotic is it's only a 7-day treatment. And when the person stops taking the antibiotic, quite often the infection rebounds 2 or 3 weeks later.
That's interesting. I'd never heard that. Have you ever had anyone who had actually had been diagnosed with cancer and been able to alleviate the cancer, or is that impossible?
Well, I've had a couple of fellows that were diagnosed with cancer and subsequently went for additional biopsies after they had been on natural products for well over a year, and no cancer was found.
Really?
So, yeah, but again, when you're doing a biopsy, you have a prostate that's typically enlarged. Normal size of a prostate is about the size of a walnut, and a man with an enlarged prostate could easily have a prostate that's the size of a lemon. And now you're going to stick a bunch of needles in this prostate at various angles and so on and so forth, and take a sample out of the prostate in between 12 and 24 places. And it does not guarantee that if there is a cancerous tumor in there that you're going to hit it. So you can get a clean bill of health and still have cancer. And vice versa, you could hit the cancer each time.
Yeah.
It's always, as they say, it's a crapshoot.
Well, you certainly have some amazing stories to tell, and I'm sure with people in the audience who have had a problem, hopefully what they've learned this evening will give them some hope, and they can find your website at prostatehealthnaturally.com, and they can email you at drjim@prostatehealthnaturally.com.
And Dr. Jim is just D-R-J-I-M.
Yes.
Not the whole word spelled out.
Yes, you're quite right. And the book that Jim has written, which has done so wonderfully, is called Your Prostate, Your Libido, Your Life. And it's available at Amazon. It's available at glenbridgepublishing.com. It's available at barnesandnoble.com. In other words, it's pretty easy to find. And
it's also available on my website, too.
Right, okay. That's another one, and that's the same website we just gave, prostatehealthnaturally.com. I think that if we've done nothing else, hopefully some people will feel more comfortable. The early test or the yearly test, or how often is it? It's a PSA, did you say?
Yes, prostate-specific antigen test, PSA.
And what does that test actually do?
It tests the level of a specific antigen that is produced only by the prostate. And when prostate cancer occurs, the level of that antigen rises. It's not a 100% positive test. It's just basically a ballpark indication. It's probably a lot more important, not the absolute value of it, but the rate of change is probably much more important. And what I recommend is that all men, starting at probably at age 50, to get a PSA every year and keep the records of that, because it can, it can tell a medical doctor, urologist, give him an awful lot of information just on the, on the history. If the history of the PSA is kind of bouncing around, that usually indicates that the man has a BPH condition rather than a cancer condition. And, of course, BPH, the very word, benign prostate hyperplasia, just means excess of prostate growth, which is common in virtually all men, but it's a rather benign condition. It's not the kind of condition that's going to kill you. It's the kind of condition you can live with for many, many years.
Well, it's been delightful talking with you. I've learned a lot, and I hope it's been helpful to our audience this evening. And if you have any questions, do get in touch with Dr. Jim. And that's
they can also
Jim. Yes.
Yeah, they can
go
also
ahead.
Reach me by phone at 239-498-1547.
And Jim, I want to thank you for being with us tonight and sharing information with our audience, and we appreciate it so very much. Good night to you.
Okay, thank you.
And we'll talk just a bit about what's coming next week. David Gamow, who is an unbelievably, wonderfully motivating individual, and his wife, Karen. David will be with us, but he works with his wife, Karen. They're considered two of the leading corporate stress and meditation trainers in this country. They've trained more than 20,000 people in helping people reduce stress and getting along in the world as it is today. And David and Karen are author of a book called Freedom from Stress, How to Take Control of Your Life. And their work has been featured in Investor's Business Daily, San Jose Mercury News, Chicago Sun-Times, television, radio, and I know you'll enjoy hearing what David has to say, because there just is not one place where you can live today without stress. And you'll learn how to do some very simple things to help you. And we look forward to seeing you next week. And thank you for being with us tonight. Good night from Conversations with Mary Keene.